You're listening to a Comics XF podcast.
X-Men. Get it!
Hey everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Battle of the Atom. This is your eco-friendly X-Men podcast where we rank every story from A to Z.
I'm Adam.
And I'm the bad boy of X-Men podcasting, Zach Jenkins. And Adam,
hey, how we doing?
How do you feel about the SEC's new disclosure laws that were just passed today, or at least announced today? And I say laws, they're more regulations, because that's what the SEC can do. But the SEC regulations around environmental disclosures for publicly traded companies around their emissions requirements. And do you think it went far enough?
I hadn't caught that headline. Gonna take a wild guess and say, regardless of any disclosures, I'm sure we're not pressuring our multinational companies to, you know, reduce their emissions levels nearly as much as we should be.
Well, you're absolutely wrong about any of the stuff that you're talking about. I just want to be like, I'm just going to jump in right there. You have no idea what the SEC just put in today.
Well, I just said I hadn't seen it. So you said, well, did they go far enough? I'm just going to take a wild guess. Probably not.
Probably not. Not for the reason you think. I don't think they went far enough because they excluded scope 3 emissions in the company disclosure. Scope 3, of course, being emissions that come from their products. So say an auto manufacturer can say, yeah, we manufacture the cars really green, but it's a friggin' gas guzzler and blowing smoke. They would have to count that under scope 3 emissions, which in the EU and in California, you have to count. So, I mean, potato, potato. Most people are going to have to do it anyway. But the SEC was afraid of, you know, the impact to business by having to count all of those emissions.
That doesn't surprise me at all. It's always about the dollar. It's never about the actual earth. We're always doing things in really tiny increments.
So I have a lot of thoughts about that around this episode, because this episode is about ecology. It is about conservationism. It is about being more sustainable with our X-Men comics and how X-Men comics have approached this very real and issue of sustainability. It's something I care a lot about and have surprisingly made a career around energy efficiency, lowering global warming potentials of the chemicals that we use, a lot of this stuff. And I think, to your point, Adam, like you were mentioning, like, oh, we never go enough, we never do anything. Can I make a recommendation to you?
Sure. I like recommendations.
I would recommend, and I recommend this to everyone on the show, but I also recommend it to Adam, to read a book that came out earlier this year by author by the name of Hannah Ritchie called Not the End of the World, How We Can Be the First Generation to Build a Sustainable Planet, which talks about both what small things, and by small, I mean not like, well, use paper straws, not plastic, but like small on a infrastructure scale things that we can do to build sustainability and how some of these things are achievable. And hey, here's some of the wins we've already had, because we can have a lot of climate doomerism about how this is not a solvable problem. And here's the thing. I don't know if you know it. In the stories we read today, Adam, there was one environmental thing that they brought up as like, oh, this is a big environmental thing that's going on. And it's one that we fixed and doesn't occur anymore. Do you know which one that is?
No. Which story are we talking about? Or which thing in the story? Let's not spoil the stories yet.
Remember where there was a hole in the ozone layer?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, we fixed that. Do people know about that? That we fixed it? That's why you don't hear about it anymore.
Right. Well, I mean, there are other problems. That's not the only
There are problem. Other problems, but I'm telling you, these problems are solvable. And when I say we fixed it, I specifically mean the HVAC industry, because the HVAC industry said, let's not use refrigerants that explode.
Sure.
And then we used things that ate the ozone layer, and we said, let's stop doing that.
There are lots of really practical and interesting solutions out there that I think could be applied. It's just, we were talking about this as we were getting ready for this episode. The stories we're going to talk about today really do seem to put a very large stress on individual and personal responsibility for fixing the planet. And the reality is,
freaking lie that came out in the 80s. about, yeah. Oh, we gotta save the sea turtles. We gotta watch our carbon footprint, our personal carbon footprint. Meanwhile, these freaking corporate pigs, these capitalist dogs are going out there polluting like crazy at a scale that none of us can reach as individuals.
Right. Right. Like, maybe if I was Taylor Swift and I could stop, like, flying around on my personal private jet.
Taylor Swift is a corporation.
Like, I'm just saying.
We gotta, like, stop pretending she's an individual.
But
she's,
I'm just saying, like, if I was that person and I could do that, then I could probably do that. But, you know, it's, like, a pretty minuscule thing when I'm driving to work versus that. You know what I mean? So, and that... That's not a good example because that's just like a pop star traveling around versus like companies that are just pumping huge tonnage of carbon waste into the atmosphere. We should get into why we're talking about all this, Zach, because we just
went on our X-Men podcast.
Yeah, we just went for like over 5 minutes on this without introducing the fact that we have a request. What is the request? Who requested this?
Thank you, Adam, for getting me on track, because I will get off track on this podcast.
Zach, go on a tangent? Never.
Adam, we have hit the weird fixation that is my day job, X-Men, and a thing I care about and read a lot of books about. Remember how this time last year I was talking about reading that old tree book? This is just the thing I do now, is read things about nature.
It's good to have interest.
Anyway, I love it. I never took... Here's the truth, and I promise you we're talking about X-Men in a second, but my education is in Christianity, and right. I say that by going to a private school for 13 years of my life, where biology was like, here's what you need to know about evolution to pass the ACT. This is the bare minimum of evolution we're going to teach you, and it's just because this is the answer they're going to expect. The dinosaurs were a lie and the fossils were fake. We didn't actually say that part. We just said that humans
that was the quiet part. The
dinosaurs. No, they said that humans hung out at the dinosaurs. Ken Ham did an entire museum about it down in Kentucky. Did my school go to field trips on that after it was introduced? Absolutely. I did not attend that field trip. I had a college class to go to that time. And then my actual college was in mechanical engineering, which does not think nature exists, in business, which does not think nature exists.
Well, so, it wishes it didn't, you know.
It would be very convenient.
It would. Really would.
But we've got Patreon supporters like James Mayer who are not letting us forget it. And if you want to be like James, I need you to reach deep down into your hearts and pocketbooks, and then deep down into those corporate pigs' hearts and pocketbooks and pull some coins from their coffers, toss them into ours for this eco-friendly podcast.
Yeah. And what is,
I don't think the carbon footprint of this podcast is too giant, all things considered. This is pretty not.
Yeah, I mean, we're not mining coal. I don't think we can, you know.
I don't think we can claim that this is carbon neutral, but it's very low carbon footprint.
Yeah. We weren't fracking to make this episode, but we are talking about James' request, which is the X-Men Digital Unlimited series, X-Men Green. Which stretches across, geez, like 25-ish issues of X-Men Unlimited on Marvel Unlimited.
It's five individual, like, arcs over 80 weeks, over a year and a half, this was going on. It was the second story that they did in the Marvel Unlimited, the X-Men Unlimited Infinity Comics.
Yep.
And for people who don't know, these are native vertical scroll comics that you can get on Marvel Unlimited. They are in continuity. They are about things. Some of them are really good.
Sure.
So X-Men Green.
Let's get into it, because I think folks probably checked out at least the first arc of this. I don't know how many people were reading like anything beyond those first five installments.
Which, by the way, if you weren't, go and like binge things. If one story's not getting you, just skip to the next one.
It's true. Like, it does allow a little bit of channel surfing there.
There's a lot of good stuff in here.
Yeah, X-Men Green is interesting. It starts with Jerry Duggan. It is drawn throughout by Emilio Lyzo, It is then picked up by Carla Pacheco for an arc, and then Steve Orlando takes over. This has three kind of different approaches, but a single arc for a character that hadn't had a ton of screen, page time, but that is one Nature Girl. And if you haven't read X-Men Green, you're about to hear about how radicalized Nature Girl got and basically got character assassinated and turned into a supervillain.
So, did you like Nature Girl before this? Because I had a soft spot for her, not because of Wolverine and the X-Men, where she was at best a non-entity and at worst a racist caricature.
Sure.
Because I liked her in Generation X and I liked her in the
Age of X-Men. Zach
Thompson, Lonnie Nadler.
Same thing.
It's me. I'm the Age of X-Men guy.
I love Christina Strain's Generation X. I wish there had been more of it. And I loved Age of X-Men's Nature Girl too, you know, with her pet bear. So we hadn't seen this character in a little bit. And after a sea turtle washes up on Krakoan shores and pukes out a plastic bag.
That it choked to death on.
Nature Girl decides that the answer to this crisis of plastics in the ocean and, you know, whatever else is harming the earth is to go to the convenience store where the bag is from and stab the clerk in the neck with a pair of scissors.
So I want to stop here.
Yeah.
Because the inciting incident in this is insane.
It is. It's
insane because this grocery store, convenience store, whatever, is in Las Vegas, Nevada. Famously a desert.
Mm-hmm.
And this plastic bag ends up in the ocean. Now, do you know how a plastic bag gets to the ocean? We have landfills. We don't dump trash into the ocean. That's an insane thing to do. It gets in rivers and waterways and gets washed out that way. Or, more commonly, it's waste from seafaring vessels. Now, here's the problem. How many deserts are there in Nevada versus rivers that can take things to the ocean?
That is an excellent point. That is a good point.
It bothered me the whole time. Also, most stuff doesn't actually make it past the rivers into the ocean. That's actually a very, 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 very small percentage of the plastic waste that's in the ocean. So right now, we are starting this from a place of Jerry Duggan grew up in a generation that had to cut the plastic rings of their soda cans so sea turtles didn't eat them.
Oh, yeah.
That was, again, based on insane things by corporations to get you to take responsibility for the environment instead of them taking responsibility for the environment.
Well, I'm fascinated by the fact that that's the thing you're hung up on, because I'm hung up on the fact that Nature Girl throughout X-Men Green has very stupid plans on saving the Earth.
The worst plans.
The very dumbest plans that I could ever think of that would basically help nobody and save nothing in regards to the global climate change that she is so angry about. And the very first thing that she does is murder a guy. Just murder an individual. Like, it's
that
going
dude was
to somehow
being a jerk. He was being slightly annoying.
Sure. I'm not saying that this guy was nice. I'm not saying that he was not being mean, but walking into a convenience store and stabbing a guy in the neck with a pair of scissors as by means to cure, like, solve climate change and the problems of the abuse of the earth doesn't seem like a good strategy.
I have not seen even the most radical ecological conservationist say that the solution is to stab grocery store employees in the neck.
Thank you. And repeatedly
now,
through
grocery store CEOs, that's a different thing. That's a different thing.
It could be, but at the same time, it's something that recurs throughout this series is that what Nature Girl and her team do often is take out by murder the lowest on the totem pole, like working class people who have no power whatsoever to affect any kind of change. And so what exactly is Nature Girl thinking that she's going to accomplish by doing any of this? This is compounded by the fact that we should get into who the team is, at least at first, because there's two very distinct versions of X-Men Green Team. The one that people are probably familiar with is the one from the first two or three arcs, which was Curse, the little pink mutant who can curse you.
I think Curse is, I like the concept of Curse.
I like Curse on in concept more than I like in execution. Curse is incredibly annoying, and it's not a character you want to root for. The third member of, well, there's two other members. There is Sauron, who is just angry because some shale oil destroyed one of his secret laboratories.
Also hates birds.
Also, yeah, really mad that they haven't chosen to be dinosaurs, even though he himself is not a dinosaur.
I want to be so clear. People, if you're not going to be as funny as that panel of Sauron saying, I don't want to cure cancer, I want to turn people into dinosaurs. If you're not 100% sure that all of your Sauron lines are going to be bangers, do not try and write a comedy, Sauron. We've already gotten to that point. We've seen how good it can be. It's always going to be lesser. And Jerry Duggan and Carla Pacheco, they do not hit those highs.
No.
The closest, and this is almost like more cringe than anything else, is when Sauron says, I'm a sapiosexual, which I don't think is right and is not in line with anything else that goes on with Sauron, but is such a bizarre thing to see in a comic that it did make me stop.
It was, I don't know, it got a chuckle out of me.
It's not as good as I don't want to cure cancer, I want to turn people into dinosaurs.
No, of course not. The fourth member of X-Men Green is a dog, a police dog named Sorsha. And these four just, you know, are wandering around using the gates and just killing people. You're going to poach something, they're going to kill you. If you work on an oil rig, they're going to kill you.
Their first plan is actually like their best plan is the problem. First plan, stop an oil pipeline.
Sure. But is
like the way they go stopping the structure.
Yes. But one of the things that I couldn't help but think of is, and if listeners have not watched this movie, I believe it is streaming on Hulu as of March, 2024, How to Blow Up a Pipeline. First of all, great movie. One of my top 10 of last year. It's so much fun. It's just really good. But it is a really smart movie that was basically adapted from an actual manifesto. And it details fictional versions of characters that are very smart kids that are trying to think about what is the maximum amount of damage that they can do to affect change in a very intelligent way, in a practical way, in a protest way. And that is in such sharp contrast to what these characters are doing in basically this bumbling way that really doesn't do much of anything. And what's crazy is that we have already talked about this story for over like 10 minutes. We haven't even gotten to how absolutely fucking bad the second half of this story is, Zach.
We're going to have to get there because we're not leaving a single stone unturned on this one. The last thing I want to say about the start of this arc, they form the team. Wolverine goes after him. He does succeed in getting him, and we'll get to that. I think what we're getting at in just tonally, it gets thrown off because it's Jerry Duggan trying to kind of do a goofy, funny joke 'em up book about a fairly dark, like if it's, hey, this nice girl is going insane because of horrible things that are legitimately happening in our world, and she is going down a violent and bloody and dark path, and it is an anxiety that almost everyone on the planet has about what's going to happen in the future, and to top it all off, you're doing a bunch of jokey jokes. Like, it just,
right,
it's tonally real screwy in a way that does not serve the story. If you want to do like a joke story, you might want to find different subject matter. It's also the same thing that's happening in Fall of X, and it's really friggin' annoying to me.
I want to get into this, right? Because you're absolutely right.
We promised people on our Discord we're not going to actually rank Fall of the House of X for
six. No. We're not doing that. But
want to be clear.
I want to go back to your thing about tone, because it would be like if it was Ethan Hawke in First Reformed, but it was like
I don't know any of these words, but keep going.
It's about a priest who's increasingly bothered. You
don't
have
to explain it to me. I just don't know.
No, it's okay. It's about a priest who's increasingly bothered by the climate crisis, right? And it's extremely dark. But it would be like if that was a slapstick comedy, and it would not make sense. That's why this does not make sense. But I want to just tackle the thing that you just brought up, which is that, especially with Rise lately, Anna and I talked about this in our piece about Rise 2, or not Rise, excuse me, Fall number 2, is that it really does seem, and I don't know if this is just from writing Deadpool for a while, that the solution to problems in the superhero comics that Jerry wants to write is murder. And that doesn't work for me. It doesn't, especially not for these characters. It does turn out
that superhero comics can come up with a different solution than murder. That's how we got the early 90s.
Thank you.
Like, it's just, we're not getting into the real world of this. It's just like, this is all fun make-em-ups. We can do something else.
We can be more creative than that. Now, what's interesting about that is that it is revealed about midway that potentially Nature Girl isn't actually going insane from the suffering of the earth, but that she has actually been cursed by curse. This retcon by Steve Orlando of Jerry Duggan's origin of the story, I don't know if that was Jerry's original intent or not, but it happens.
I feel after like Jerry it almost has gone. To be. It almost has to be part of like the original. This is hope, the plan for this story.
I would hope. But what's interesting is that is not how the story wraps up. You would think that upon that revelation, we would then find some way to bring Nature Girl back to original flavor, you know, original recipe Nature Girl. Zach, I'm handing it over to you, man. You got to tell our audience who has not probably read the second X-Men Green. What happens when Steve Orlando goes all Steve Orlando on X-Men Green?
Okay, so hold on, because I want to get there. You know I personally want to get there. There's two things we got to cover right before that.
Okay, go ahead.
Right before. Let's put a pin in Orlando for one second. First, at the end of the first arc, they get captured, and I think this is actually the strongest part of all of X-Men Green, is that Nature Girl and Curse get tried. Krakoa and Doug say, we don't like this. We are part of the planet, and end of the day, you know, people were not respecting the sacred land. So you're trading one rule for another. This is kind of a complex. Anyway, Doug does his prison abolitionist thing. And this is, if you look at everything, right, this is before Inferno and before Sabretooth, or like almost concurrent with the Sabretooth stuff. So it was a really cool, like, we're playing with Doug knows way more about this and is way bigger into all of Krakoa. Like that,
That works
super well. Like Doug and Krakoa saying, nah, here you go, here's a magic stick,
go. Which then she loses,
go do things better. She immediately loses. Then Carla Pacheco takes this on for a couple of issues. I'm just not a Carla Pacheco fan, and it leans even harder into the slapstick side of it in a way that just doesn't particularly work for me. And that's, I think that's a bit of a challenge, but nothing major happens. They meet a bunch of different Marvel characters, including Horticulture, who become a big part of this. We all know Horticulture, the old plant grandmas.
Plant grannies. They're there.
I've gone back and forth on them. I'm pro at this point.
Oh, I think they're fun.
By the end of it, I've gotten to actually, they're great. When they showed up in Ms. Marvel this week, I was like, let's go. Ms. Marvel versus Horticulture. I actually do want to see that. If this was all the mutant stuff with Kamala, for this, worth it. Anyway. Steve Orlando gets on the book, does the curse retcon, has them do stuff for Horticulture, specifically rescuing the Armageddon Man from a government warehouse.
Everybody remember the Armageddon Man? Everybody remember that character from X-Force Volume 1?
Adam, would you have known that it was that character if we didn't read that X-Force arc and mention that he shows up in this less than 6 months ago?
Zach, I had, when I stumbled upon the Armageddon Man in this story, I was like, okay, I know who this is. I know who this is. Still had to go to the Marvel Wiki. Still had to remind myself that this was from the Bedlam arc of X-Force. It's like, okay.
Listen.
This is Steve doing his Steve thing.
I have to appreciate it. The intellectual, like, the guy who is ranking 900 X-Men stories can appreciate that side of it. The person who wants to, like, read a coherent story is stuck on the fact that if anyone is going to be like, oh, yeah, that's the Armageddon Man, it's me. And even I'm like, wait, which?
Yeah, who's that guy again?
What's happening here, Steve? Who's this? This isn't the alchemy that I think. This is a different alchemy that you have on this team, Steve. Oh, this is the alchemy from Pride and Wisdom who shows up on four pages ever? Yes, Steve. I guess I remember that story. Why is this taking page time? It is so much better conceptually that, like, Steve Orlando brought ice cream back in an issue than it is to read and be like, how is this bettering the story? That is my big Steve Orlando challenge. Is I love it as a reader. I'm like, you're not making it easier on the audience.
Well, because the team that we just described for the first half is not the team for the latter half. The latter half,
right.
Nature Girl,
so
Armageddon Man, and a new character named Spider Girl.
Nope, not a new character, Adam.
Where was Spider Girl before this?
I can't believe you don't remember the one issue of Astonishing Spider-Man number 16 by Christos Gage.
Oh, of course. Yes, sure.
We all remember.
Avenging Spider-Man?
Avenging Spider-Man.
Yes. Yeah, no.
Yes.
No idea.
Avenging Spider-Man was the team-up book around
2013.
Yeah, right before the Doc Ock stuff. Right before Superior, and then it became Superior Team Up. Anyway, so this is a nothing character that no one remembered from a book that's not an X-Men book. And Spider-Girl, who is, and I need people to know this, when we say Spider-Girl, we mean that she is a clone created by the Jackal named Gwen Warren, who is a mutant and a spider person. And we later find out a partial clone of Scott Summers.
And Gwen Stacy.
And the Spider Queen lady from Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
And so basically, the team is now Nature Girl. We forgot to mention that Nature Girl is really going.
There's a lot that happens here.
Nature Girl is going through this, like, radical physical transformation as well. Like, we get to the point where, you know, instead of just her standard antlers, she has no hair. She's got, like, you know, this dark face paint over her. It's not face paint, but it looks like that over her eyes. She eventually has hooves. She, you know, is becoming just much larger. You know, by the end of this story, she's like, I don't know, 10 feet tall. She just continues to become this, like, monstrous figure. And
she gets Hellboy horns at one point.
Yeah.
It's at one point with how her antlers work. It was weird. Yeah,
she's got the Hellboy horns, even though the antlers have been on the sides of her head for the majority of the story. At one point she rips off Eyeboy's arm. I was like,
Eyeboy tries to talk her off the ledge.
What world is going on here?
Also, Curse dies, and she feels really bad about it, and that continues the search. And then there's a moral thing about, should we resurrect Curse or not? I don't remember how that worked out. Maybe it got brought up in Realm of X, but that was quite possibly the worst book in the Krakoan era, so I don't remember it.
I believe it is decided by Jean that they will put Curse back into the resurrection queue so that they can give Curse a second chance at life. This leads to the final master plan of Nature Girl, which involves a scientific juice from horticulture that will devolve anything.
No, not from Adam. This is a Steve Orlando comic. Do you think this was a new juice?
Oh, where's the juice?
Do you think
from?
This is new juice? This is the genus compound that we all remember from,
here we go,
Chip Zdarsky's Invaders comic.
No, really? That's a pull from somewhere else? That's crazy.
That's a pull. Here's the thing about Steve Orlando. It's all pulls. And on one hand, I don't think he should be giving out ideas to a corporation that's never going to support him. I agree with that. On the other hand, he keeps pointing out like, hey, you guys kind of know what this is, right? And we don't. I don't understand this reference, Steven.
Well, there's no like editor's note pointing me to be like, hey, you remember this green goo? It's from this other thing. So
it's also from Conan Battle of the Serpent Crown.
No.
Okay. By Saladin Ahmed, which amazing. I did not read.
Yeah, I haven't read any of that stuff. So her master plan is to devolve the human race back into critters. And she ends up accidentally devolving the Armageddon Man into a lemur. And just sicks this juice on like a random town somewhere and everybody's turning into mush.
It's Niagara Falls and she sicks the juice using dragonflies, which has to be a Coheed and Cambria reference. Not because of dragonflies. I get that those are like a thing outside of Coheed and Cambria, but dragonflies delivering serums that will like mutate people. That's a Coheed and Cambria thing from Second Saint's Turbine Blade. It's very weird that it's in here, Steven.
I mean, it escalates to the point where you have the core X-Men team actually going up against Nature Girl as if she is like a fully fledged supervillain. And they're losing, which is bonkers to me. Because I guess she's wearing some sort of psi blocker or something.
It doesn't matter why. What does happen is that Cyclops gets turned into a Krakoa gate, like body horror style. That's fun.
Sure, sure. Eventually,
I like it when people turn into things like it's an annihilation.
Yeah. I can get down with that. But the story does sort of hit the reset and allow Nature Girl to just kind of go off and be a Mystique-like character, right? Like, well, that's kind of how we wrap up.
Well, can we talk about how it really goes down? Because there's an incredibly important and truly bizarre denouement to this, where in the middle of this fight, Nature Girl's talking about how she's been talking this whole time, how she can feel the planet.
I forgot about this part. Yeah, go ahead.
And do you know who shows up? Thor's mom, Gaia. Like,
yeah.
Mother Nature.
Yep.
Shows and up.
And it's like,
Nature.
What are you
Nature
doing?
Girl. Nature Girl, I appreciate it. I love the energy.
Right.
You're doing so much murder. And she's like, and it's not your fault. Your little weird pink friend made this happen. So we can fix this. Like, I'm going to make it so that you're good. We're all fine. If you stop the murder. And Nature Girl says, no, going to keep murdering. Bye-bye. You suck, Mother Nature.
Yeah.
It's weird that Thor's mom, who's not the Phoenix, shows up. And then it's weirder that it doesn't. Like, I like the bold step that actually, no, she's too far gone. And while she might have started as being cursed, we're not going to, like, tuck this all away and make this be a bad memory. Like, I like the boldness of that. I just wish it was in service of a better story overall.
Well, it also doesn't change anything. You know, she's still just this raving lunatic supervillain. And Zach, this is bad. Like,
I mean, it's not good.
It's bad from beginning to end. And I read all of this last night in one sitting and it felt interminable. I could not believe that the story was not just wrapping up after the second arc. I couldn't believe that it didn't wrap up after the third arc. And by the time I had to read the fourth and fifth ones, I was just so exhausted by what they were doing to this character. Because we've talked about character assassination before on this show, but there's usually an effort to try and turn the character back into something that's a little bit more familiar. And while I do appreciate that they're taking a risk here by taking a character that is relatively like unformed, Nature Girl really didn't have a lot of character to begin with. Right. And doing something new and exciting with the character, but to just turn her into a vigilante murderer instead of something that I think at the bare minimum, we might have expected that this character was intelligent and had could have come up with smarter ideas for how to accomplish her goals than what it is that we see in this story. It's just, it's very dumb. It's very disappointing.
It's a wild eco-terrorism story, and even more wild when there's like a Poison Ivy book that's coming out right now that rules and has Poison Ivy murdering people for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And also I'm not like annoyed by it because that one has logical consistency and strong characterization. G. Willow Wilson, Marcico Takara being the main artist on that over at DC. Go check it out if you haven't. If this book sounds good, but you want it to actually be good. And that's the thing, like you're talking about reversion back to the core. And normally I'm against that, but I want to be very specific. I'm against that when the story that they reverted like to is good. Like, I'm not mad if they go, actually, the Punisher is not going to be watching over children in Weird World and this guy named Jake Garrison, who's exactly Frank Castle, but with a different name. Like, that's a bad thing. We can revert that one to the normal. Or, hey, the Punisher is an angel killing assassin now. We can revert that away. All of my things are Punisher-based. I guess, well, are my like examples.
A good equivalent in the world of X-Men is what, you know, Ben Percy has taken the strands of what was already there and with very Beast. Intelligently built out Beast in a great way to become a legit supervillain. Now, it does seem, and I don't know how this is going to wrap up, that they're moving towards sort of maybe getting back to the basic Beast, right?
I'm going to put this out here right now. Right now, Adam.
Yeah,
I think I kind of 100% think that is a red herring.
I hope
that's
so.
To get people because Ben Percy's smarter than that. Like when he writes a data page a year and a half beforehand saying, and also, look, we have this option to wipe away all of this stuff that I've been doing easily.
Mm-hmm.
I think he knows that. And I think he knows that people are going to be like, we'll just wipe it all away. And instead, I think he ends his story with Beast not having an option and not getting a get out of jail free card. And I think he leaves it to somebody else. I hope that's the case. Cause I trust Ben as a writer.
I really hope that's the case, but that is an example of someone who is very intelligently over time building that character and seeding the things that will make them more evil. So that when the real, like the X-Force base stands up and walks away in Wolverine, it's very clear that it's earned. And what happens, nothing that happens in this story feels earned. And so it just feels like a prolonged punishment. And
this is a book that essentially starts with that scene in 21 Jump Street where Dave Franco is playing the song on his guitar and be like, Mother Earth, she's dying. It's insane. This is a wild story. This is the last thing we're going to say about this because we're going to end on a good note.
Okay.
Emilio Lasso, this is not your fault. You did a great job all the way through and you're so good at drawing animals.
Oh, we got to praise the art. The art looks great. Really, really smart facial expressions, character acting. There's some really good, you know, anatomy in terms of some of the characters especially when they're fighting. And like you said, the illustrations of animals, especially in the first two arcs, are absolutely gorgeous. In the later arcs, it does seem like, they're rushed. They have a little less time, but it still looks good. We got to rank still this act good. Because we have done just about rank a it.
We've
full
done a whole episode on this.
And we still have two more stories.
It's okay. The last two are a bit quicker. I was about to say I wasn't expecting to talk about X-Men Green this long, but I absolutely was expecting to talk about X-Men Green this long because I tried to like say, hold on, let's see where this is going for the longest time with this story. And then I saw where it was going. I was like, this is bad. Actually, you went to the wrong place.
Yeah. Yeah. I had high hopes. Why don't you tell our listeners about this big old list that they may not have heard of?
So that's the great thing. We do have a big old list. We're ranking all the X-Men stories from best to worst. We're on the road to 900. We have ranked 882 X-Men stories, with the best being the House of X Powers of 10, a book I am reading chronologically right now. And I've got to tell you, not the right way to read the book. A very interesting way for me, a guy who edited essentially a novel's worth of essays on House of X Powers of 10. Very fascinating for me personally to read that chronologically.
I refuse.
It does not. Should do it, Adam. You would like it. It does not work as the first time you read this story. It would be insane. It works so much as, especially the Krakoa being built part.
Okay.
That works really, really, really well. And you get Moira's whole sixth life in one fell swoop that makes you see, she went through hell and that's why she changed her mind and started getting more radical. By the way, as I'm rereading this, I think they went a little too far in making Moira an evil robot lady in the future, but it's there in the text.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like it's there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's the best one. Wolverine Jungle Adventures at 100. At 300 is Phoenix Resurrection, The Return of Jean Grey. At 500 is New Mutants Annual Number 3. At 700 is the Decimation Arc of X-Men. That's the Claremont X-Men. And at 882, the worst X-Men story of all time is 2099, The World of Tomorrow. Adam. This is probably worse than the Decimation Arc with the Leopard Queen at 700.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're no higher than the 600s, and we're probably in the 700s. This just was not working for me.
Is it worse than Kings of Pain?
I don't know if it's that bad.
Because that's where we have to get. That's 739. I don't know. I kind of think it might be worse than Kings of Pain.
Then let's look if we're going to put it below the. It's not as bad as the Wolverine Origins arc of Romulus stories, 37 to 40 at 745. So we got to be in between here, I think.
Because this book is at least trying to do something. It's failing.
Right, right.
But it is, you know, trying.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know what? It might actually be a good spot to just put this in between Kings of Pain and the first six issues of Emma Frost.
This is way higher than I thought this story was going to go.
How low do you think it should go? Do you think this is like
I don't know. This isn't worse than X-Men Black Sun at 840.
No. I don't think we're in the 800s. Like,
we are. Man, there's a lot of bad X-Men comics.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we're down in the 800s, to be honest with you.
You're saying below Kings of Pain, above Emma Frost 1-6?
Yeah.
I would go slightly lower because do think that X-Men Infinites of Evil is better than this.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's good.
I do. Innocence Lost, X-23 Innocence Lost is probably better than this. Like, I don't like that story, but it's more competently told. Like, you could read that trade paperback and you got it. Like, you may not love the story, but it does tell one story.
I mean,
probably better than that.
Yeah, those two issues of Avengers. Yeah. All right, so this is going to be our new 743. This may be the longest we have ever spent talking about one story on this show, X-Men Green. That can't be true. I don't know. Now I want to go back and see how long we talked about Hoxbox, because we just talked about that story for like over half an hour, which is pretty impressive.
We skipped over a lot. Like, we could go back.
Talk about everything.
We could do a lot more about X-Men Green, folks.
We could, but we're not going to.
Can we at least talk about how X-Men Green was a joke that was pitched by Declan Shalvey, wants to do an all-Irish team of X-Men, and he did draw, like, the concept of it, but Marvel didn't take him up on it because they wanted him to write the drawings of
that. I remember seeing the drawings. It's really good.
In fact, go back to the 2019 C2E2 episode. I think that's when I interviewed Deck about it.
It's great. All right. It's great. Let's talk about a different approach to combating climate change and problems in the Earth. And that is through a global organization known as the World Wildlife Fund, And of course, everybody's favorite environmental protector, Wolverine.
So people get mad at the WWF because they made the World Wrestling Federation change their name. And I think history has proven the Panda People to be better than Vince McMahon.
I hope so. At the bare minimum. So this book is
That's called what I know the WWF from.
Yeah. I used to get like little mailers from the, I think my parents used to donate to WWF, not the wrestling, but the World Wildlife.
The Panda People. The Panda People. They give pistols to pandas.
We used to get a lot of like things in the mail with their little panda logo on them. So the book we're talking about
hold on. I hope Anna, when she listens to this, does get the late era Homestar Runner pistols for panda joke I just made, because they need all the firepower they can get.
I forgot about that one. That was good.
Did you forget about this? It's all I can think about when I see a panda is the guy who voices the Chief Commandos going, pistols for pandas. They need all the firepower they can get. rock on.
This is great, because last episode I did mistakenly call Strong Guy Strong Bad several times in the episode. So
I heard that.
All right. This comic is Wolverine in Global Jeopardy, guest starring Zabu, Kazar, Shanna, the She-Devil, and Sub-Mariner. This is written, and it's all interesting, credited as written and drawn by Peter David on the first page.
But that's not true.
The art is by Richard Howell and inks by Bill Anderson. This is a fun little comic. If you get to stumble on this in a dollar bin, definitely pick it up, because Zach, were you old enough for Zoo Books?
I was old enough for the infomercials about Zoo Books. Okay. I was also poor.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry to hear that, but I did have
I survived.
I did have a couple of the Zoo Books. I distinctly remember there being a Zoo Books ad where a kid had like all of these jungle like plants in his bedroom and a pith helmet on. And I was like, I want my bedroom to look like that. And folks, I bought.
Just so you know, Zoo Books was a thing in the late 80s, early 90s that you could mail in and get a different magazine every month about a new kind of animal. And there were a lot of infomercials on Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network about that.
Tons of them. So, you know, I wanted my room to look like a jungle. So my mom
have you looked at the Zoo Books logo recently? It's kind of a good logo.
Oh, it's a great logo. It's a great logo.
That's a good logo.
You're not letting me finish my story.
I'm sorry. I was looking at the Zoo Books logo.
I want my room to look like this jungle room from this Zoo Books ad. So my mother kindly buys me one of these hanging spider plants. You know, it's like a hanging basket. I immediately kill the plant within like a month. And that plant was out. Yeah. So no more of that. But this issue is a comic story that is punctuated every two or three pages by a beautiful photo of a very cute animal, like a baby seal or a tiger. And it tells you a little Zoo Books type encyclopedia thing about the animal.
Honestly, those are the second best part of this comic. Is that like, oh, look at that cute animal. Yeah. Here's what's happening in this comic.
Yes.
Wolverine, Namor, Kazar, Shaun of the She-Devil, they all find that they're in a situation where an animal's likely getting poached or in jeopardy.
Yep.
And the animal disappears. It gets blinked away.
Yep. Where did it go, Zach?
They all find the most convenient plot ways to like figure out that it all went to this one island.
Yes.
Including Namor island. Just asking some fish if they know what's going on.
It's pretty great.
By the way, I want to be clear. Shaun of the She-Devil and Kazar are not in the Savage Land. They're hanging out in Africa. Which makes me think that, here's the thing, I don't like Peter Allen David. I know Peter Allen David knows where Shaun of the She-Devil and Kazar live, and it's not Africa.
No, but it's there might have been
Savage Land.
There might have been some editorial notes from WWF, you know, like, hey.
I'm 100% sure they were like, these guys should be somewhere where, we're not trying to protect dinosaurs, Peter. So why do you have the dinosaur people in this one?
They're like jungle people, but not dinosaur jungle people. So they end up at the secret island nature preserve / Noah's Ark of the conservator, who's basically been stealing animals because he thinks like he can save them from whatever's going on the rest of the planet. And, you know, unlike most comics that have like a battle scene or something, they basically just talk the conservator out of his like stupid plan and get him to donate the island to the World Wildlife Fund as a nature preserve.
Well, hold on, because there is one.
Oh, wait. I totally forgot.
And unexpected piece of action.
Okay. I skipped over the best scene in the book.
Literally, I was like, what?
Yeah.
You put this X-Men character in this?
Yep. Who saves the day, Zach?
Oh, it's a devilish dinosaur.
That is right.
It's quite a devilish dinosaur.
Devil Dinosaur does break through the wall and smash up the conservator's lab. And this is
literally
what convinces him.
Devil Dinosaur shows up, runs through a building,
disappears.
Gone for the rest of the comic. Surprise Devil Dinosaur.
Over that. It's pretty
it's the
great.
Best.
Yeah.
Especially because really I'll give Richard Howe credit, because I don't love most of his art. When Devil Dinosaur is crashing through the wall, it is drawn in reference to Jack Kirby Devil Dinosaur number one.
Oh, it's 100%. Yeah. Like every single panel that Devil Dinosaur is in is like, it looks like a Jack Kirby illustration.
It's like
right there.
We're doing Devil Dinosaur now. Oh, yeah. That's good. That part real good, actually.
So story-wise, this is pretty slight. It's cute. It is, you know, giving like fun facts about animals. So I think it's a fun collector's item. But in terms of like comic book story, it leaves a lot to be desired.
There is one interesting thing about this. This comic has a tribute page at the end to the then recently deceased Carol Kalish, who was a Marvel employee who, and it's no exaggeration, pretty much saved comics by inventing the direct market when there was nowhere else to sell comics.
Mm-hmm.
She passed away too young, and they say, hey, essentially what they say is, look, Carol wasn't a flashy person, but if you know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rest in peace to a real one. That's a nice little tribute at this that I wasn't expecting. Otherwise,
it is really nice.
This is a weird little thing, but I didn't hate it as much as I was expecting.
No, it's light, it's enjoyable, it's clearly for a youth audience. It had a $2.95 cover price when it came out, and it does have an embossed like cover to it. So, it's very nice and nice presentation on this book. And like I said, you can probably find it in a dollar bin somewhere. That's where I found it. And it's a cute thing to have. Is it better or worse than X-Men Green?
Oh, it's better than X-Men Green.
I think it's better than X-Men Green.
It's better than X-Men Green. I would say it's better than X-Men Deadly Genesis at $5.48.
Okay. All right.
It is probably not better than Apocalypse War from Extraordinary X-Men, just on a craft standpoint.
No. But I would say... Are we really putting this this high? Are we putting it this high?
Yeah, I think so. Adam, is this... You think this is worse than Daydreamers? I think this is better than Daydreamers.
No, you're right. Now that I'm looking around, I think we're in a good spot.
This is not worse than First X-Men by Neil Adams.
No, you're right. All right. My ceiling again. What if Wolverine married Mariko? I think that's better.
I also agree. That is better. The Wolverine and the X-Men story where Phoenix powered Colossus and Kitty go on a date is probably better.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this is better than Aurora Before the Storm, though.
I would agree. All right. So this is going to be our new 542 Wolverine Global Jeopardy. And we have one more story for you that I wasn't expecting at all of, ecological conservation. And it comes to us from the world of 2099. Zach, what is this?
A world of ups and downs, let's just say. This is Doom 2099, 19 through 21. It's Welcome Doom 2099 to the Savage Land 2099, which is
that
funny. That's
is
funny. That's
correct.
Funny. They put the 2099 under the Savage Land.
Everything has to be 2099.
That's good.
Welcome to McDonald's 2099.
This is by John Francis Moore, my dear.
All right, there we go.
I said this the other day online, and I want to make sure that people know I'm saying this with the most love and respect in the world here.
Yeah.
John Francis Moore might be my favorite bad X-Men writer.
No notes.
Like, his stuff's not, it's not Tolstoy, but I love it. Does that make sense?
Like, it's generally pretty fun stuff, you know?
And it's generally trying more ideas than its peers, and I really respect that. And you get that in this story. Also, Pat Broderick draws this. It's about Doom 2099. Adam, you know the deal about Doom, right? In 2099?
Doom 2099 is Doom from the 1990s transferred into someone else's body in 2099. Into a robot,
yeah.
Right?
And he gets a cool cyber suit, yeah.
Yeah.
He immediately, because I accidentally read issue 2, he immediately, when he comes back to 2099, he's like, well, I'm taking over Latveria again.
Yeah.
Like, that's my country. Immediately, he's like, I'm the ruler of Latveria in 2099. I'm Doom. Y'all remember me from the Legends?
Well, what this, I don't know how long this has been going on because I haven't read all of Doom 2099, but it suggests that this individual is starting the body that Doom's like consciousness is inside, is starting to remember who he actually was before Doom's consciousness was put into his body. And that the real Dr. Doom of 2099 is in some like secret lair with, another villainess, another supervillain, and they're watching over this all happen. Can we talk about like Pat Broderick? Not bad, you know, at people, but really good at drawing dinosaurs. Like, it really great dinosaur.
Dinosaur drawer.
Yeah. Like, Stegosaurus.
So good at dinosaurs.
Great stuff. It's really great. Now, listeners, you've probably been listening for a minute or so and going, why are they talking about Doom 2099? What in the world does that have to do with X-Men? And of course, because it's a 2099 story, all of the books overlap, and we have a guest starring role here from the Wolverine of X-Men 2099. Everybody's favorite, Bloodhawk.
It's Bloodhawk, baby. It's Bloodhawk. Right. Bloodhawk. Is Bloodhawk a good character? No. Is he a good design? Also, no. Does Bloodhawk love the environment? Yes.
Does Bloodhawk kind of look like a dinosaur and so looks good because Pat Broderick can draw good dinosaurs? Yes.
Kinda.
Yes. Probably the best Bloodhawk has ever looked.
That's no shame to Ron Lim, but
no,
it's also true. There's a page. It's the last page of the first issue in this. And I think this sums up everything. Because after Doom 2099 has fought a T-Rex.
Yep. And killed it by accident.
It was self-defense. Let's be...
His suit overpowered itself and blew up.
And then broke.
And killed the dinosaur, which was one of the last living T-Rexes on the planet, apparently.
Last page. It's a splash. Doom, face away from us. He's out of his armor. And of course, it's Doom, so you're not going to see his face. Like, that it would be rude to. He's in this ocean, or in this stream. Boom! Bloodhawk's right there saying, you may have been able to kill one of the last Tyrannosauruses on Earth, but that won't fare that well against Bloodhawk. Caption box. It's a quote from Paradise Lost. The epic poem by Milton?
Hey,
about Eden?
This won't be the last time that Francis Moore quotes a famous text, because later, I think it's the next issue, he quotes Psalms. And then I forget what the third quote is in the third issue.
The last issue the third issue he quotes Psalms. The second issue, Adam, he quotes Death of a Salesman.
Yeah, what?
Again,
so funny.
John Francis Moore, I love you so much.
What are you
does,
doing,
it
sir?
It does end the cliffhanger for the next issue says, next, and now an X-Man. It's like, great.
Amazing.
This is perfect.
Yeah.
I love it.
So the reason this connects to our larger theme this week is that there is the Alchemex company is in the Savage Land.
Oh, Liz Allen's company?
Yes. Savage Land 2099.
Liz Allen.
unusual seismic activity. So what it is revealed is that Alchemex is drilling for vibranium in Savage Land 2099, but they're doing so directly on a fault line. So they're basically risking destroying the entire Savage Land 2099 with earthquakes. But this faction of Alchemex is being led by a man who maybe has done a little too much peyote.
Are you talking about Christian Largenet?
Yes, yes. Largent.
Of the Swamp Tribe?
Oh, Largent. Boy.
Dude's very high this whole time. Thinks he is one of the Swamp Tribe. He has left Alchemex and joined that. And sends them all through like these weird rituals and all this stuff in this secret temple. Bloodhawk teams up with Dr. Doom after they deal with the Tyrannosaurus issue. And Bloodhawk has a team of environmental rangers that he's
including Czar, who appears to be Kazar, like son or something, like, but he's also canon.
I'm going to be honest, Adam. I should have picked up on that. I did not.
Yeah.
That's obviously Kazar 2099.
Yeah, he's Kazar 2099, and he has like cannonball powers. Like he flies around on like a little what would you call that? Like he has wings, like robot wings,
yeah.
You know. Yeah. Anyway, Doom doesn't have his costume. So Doom is
this
pulling
entire time.
He's pulling a TMNT Rat King's look here, which I absolutely love, because he not only bandages his face, he ties each individual band around his head as if it were an individual Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles headband. So he has, it has to be like 13 to 15 individual bows with like all of the little strappy things hanging out everywhere. It is the dumbest thing you could possibly do to wrap up your head, but it actually looks kind of cool.
It looks pretty cool, actually. It's cool. It's like, unfortunately, this is rad as hell.
Yeah. So
they do some stuff. The cover of the next issue says the Shadow King. I got to be clear. The Shadow King does not appear in this, nor does any real 2099 version of the Shadow King. I kept waiting for that. It didn't happen. That was
no,
weird,
it's
right?
It. I think it's just a reference to the villains that are looking down on him, including Neon Angel and Dr. Doom, Eric Czerny version of Dr. Doom from Earth 928, I believe, if the wiki is correct, which it usually is.
That's the Earth 2099 version.
That is not.
That's
the,
this 2099.
This cover is misleading because that is not really the focus of the story. The focus of the story is them defeating the Alchemex and Swamp Tribe folks who, you know, could potentially be destroying the Savage Land 2099.
Yeah, they stop them. It's fun.
I had fun reading this.
This is like, I know we're not giving it a lot of credit. This is like a good average. Like, oh yeah, this is why 2099 is kind of dumb fun. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot to enjoy here. It does make me want to read a lot more of the John Francis Moore Doom 2099. Because like I said, I read number two, and I got to tell you who the villain of Doom 2099 at the start is, because I laughed very hard at the name of the villain. Hold on. Oh, yeah. It's a gentleman by the name of Tiger Wild.
Okay. Are there Y's? Are there Y's in that
in the
name?
Wild, yes. Yeah, yes. I wish it was Tiger Wild, like Tiger Tiger, the poem.
Uh-huh. But it's not.
But it's not.
Yeah.
He has a tiger face. He's a weird dude. I think he was the dictator of Latveria. And also on the Alchemex Board of Directors.
Just amazing.
I love this stupid series.
Yeah, I mean, this is not smart, but it does tickle like a certain kind of funny bone here of like just dumb 90s silliness. It's the same reason that I like X-Men 2099. I think Francis Moore has a specific tone and silliness about his work in this era that just is very enjoyable to me.
But he's also like, he's not phoning it in. That's the thing.
No.
Like, he's introducing fun new ideas, and he's doing that Jack Kirby, Grant Morrison thing of being like, yeah, I'm going to throw this word at you, and then we're not going to explain it. You can fill in the blanks of what this concept is.
Mm-hmm.
I love
mm-hmm.
it. Where do we have other 2099s ranked?
Oh, boy. They're probably in, like, the 400s, 500s.
It's What's... the highest is the Halloween Jack thing at 392, which is fair. Yeah. Also, that one's better than this.
We have the first three issues at 423.
I think this is better than the first three issues.
But not as Maybe good as not... the Zao arc at 417.
I would say below the Zao arc, oh, man. Okay, this is tough.
We might be too high. Because it's kind of... I don't know. Is this as good as the City of the Dead arc at 429?
You're right. It's not as good as City of the Dead. Can we put it right below that, but above X-Men Gold from 2013?
Sure. Why not? Let's do it.
That feels right-ish.
We enjoy these books. Sure. We enjoy these silly 2099 books, except for the worst story of all time, which doesn't really count.
Yeah, except for the bad ones.
Except because that happened after 2099, like, fell apart. So
it happened after the editor got let go. And they were like, an entire artist revolt. I love that. Adam, we're done with this episode. That was so much.
We covered so much. We saved the planet. Thank God. And Zach, you got anything going on? We want to thank our patron.
That's what I have going on. Yes. I want to thank, if you want to be like our great Patreon supporter, James Mayer, who made us talk for nearly an hour about X-Men Green.
Oh, we're over an hour now.
Oh, we are. This is a bonus size. We're going to put an extra dollar on the price tag for this episode because you're getting so much more content. Patreon.com/Battle of the Atom. It's a fun time. Request some things. We're having fun. We're in our vibes era. I've come up with so many bad ideas for me and Adam to do at a certain point. And I keep writing them down.
I love it.
I love it. Adam, what do you got going on?
So folks, you may have noticed there's been some technical difficulties with ComicsXF. Rest assured, the site is alive. We are working on getting this figured out so that you can actually visit the site and, you know, great fun content on its way. You guys can always follow me on Twitter at Arthur Stacey, Adam Reck on Instagram and Blue Sky. And Zach, next week, I believe we are doing the episode that I falsely advertised for this week, correct?
The Eva Bell one that I should have looked at our list and instead I didn't and just read everything and then said, yeah, this is, oh crap, Adam, we're switching weeks now. Have you read everything? Great. We're switching weeks because we can read those Bendis comics like that.
This is going to be great next week. A lot less reading. So I'm very excited about that.
Honestly, also 2099 content.
Yes. Looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it too. But until then, folks, this has been Battle of the Atom. We hope you survived the experience. Get it!